Welcome to California Dreaming. What was that music, Tom?
That was a fun little intro to some little web videos that you did from Cannes about 10 years ago now.
Yes, it's Cannes week and Tom is leaving me and the babies again because he's going to the red carpet in Cannes.
Yeah, I'm sorry I have to leave again, but I cannot pass up this opportunity. We have been together before, but I have never been there with a movie, and who knows if it'll happen again. So my movie Horizon with Kevin Costner is premiering at Cannes, and I'm going to go.
Yeah, and we do have fun memories from there. I think 10 years ago, we were there together. And yes, I had been offered a job from Swedish television to be a news correspondent.
Roving reporter.
Yes, for Viasat Play. And it was me and Claes Eklund. Ekdal? Oh my God. Claes Eklund. No, not Claes. Hans Eklund. Hans Åhlund. Oh my God. I'm going to stop at Hans Eklund. Anyway.
You were really good at it. I was really
impressed. It was fun. I love doing hosting jobs, but it was
very natural.
A little nerve-wracking because they're like, okay, do this, do that. It was different things every day. Talk to people on the street, ask them what they're doing in Cannes, or like trying to figure out stuff that we know nothing about in Cannes. And it was a lot of fun. And you can find these videos on YouTube if you just search for Viasat. Jennifer Ackerman Cannes, I guess.
Yeah, that's what
we
just did.
And I even interviewed you.
Yeah, you did, on the beach.
Yeah. And I say like, oh, now I'm going to interview my boyfriend.
God morgon, Sverige. Här sitter jag på stranden i Cannes och ska precis intervjua min egen pojkvän faktiskt. Nice to meet you, Tom. You're very cute.
So weird.
It's really actually kind of a fun archive of us and our history to go back and look at that. But yeah, no, you were really good at it. It's not easy to do that kind of thing, just to go up and talk to strangers and be natural on camera. And honestly, I was like, oh, seeing another side to this girl. Very impressed. She's very, I mean, I knew you were fun, but like it was very impressive. And we definitely had a really good time.
Yeah, it was a crazy trip and we almost missed a flight there and back.
Yeah. We did one thing at the beginning, which I don't think I've ever done, which is that we ran for the plane. I like to get there like really early at the airport and be all ready to get on the plane at least an hour before it takes off.
It wasn't our fault because our friend had accidentally stepped on the train the wrong direction.
Oh, she got on first?
Yes.
And then we just followed her?
Yeah, she was going, like, this is the train, follow me.
Oh, that's
right. We got on the train after an hour. We're like, shouldn't we be there now? And then we checked and we had gone the wrong direction. So we had to get off the train, jump in a cab, and drive the fastest we could to the airport.
That's right.
I guess it was it Gatwick?
Yeah, it was off from Gatwick.
Yeah. It was Gatwick, yeah. Literally got to the airport. God. We couldn't check our bags. We had to buy different bags so that we could only do hand luggage or carry-ons.
I don't know how we not had enough time to do that.
We got on the plane like 10 minutes before it took off.
So it started off in a very hectic and rushed way.
Yeah. And thankfully, because of those carry-ons that we had bought on the way there, I was able to make the plane back.
Because you didn't have to check a bag.
Yes, because as a 24-year-old girl who was invited to come to Paul Allen's boat the last night of Cannes, I obviously took that opportunity. Paul Allen was
One of the creators of Microsoft with Bill Gates.
Exactly. And I had some other friends in Cannes from LA who was like, come on to Paul Allen's boat tonight.
Yeah, I was a bit jealous because that's like the boat to get on at Cannes.
Yeah, so it was my last night in Cannes, and we went on the boat, and I had a blast. And my friends were like, we're going to leave. I'm like, what? I'm not leaving. I'm on this boat, and there was a band. And I ended up having a great time and was up on stage with Paul, and he showed me the studio. And then, like, I don't even want to – we probably shouldn't say the part.
You can. You don't have to say her name.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So earlier on the boat, someone had offered you weed, right?
Yes. One of my LA friends offered me weed, and I'm not a huge weed person, so I said no. And then later on, I met a pretty famous, a really famous American actress.
Yeah.
We were talking, and she's like, yeah, you know, whatever. I really want weed. And I was like, you wait here. I'm going to run and get it because I know who has it. And I got my friend, and I was able to get her weed on the boat, and she was, like, so happy. How did you get weed on in Paul Allen's boat in the middle of the ocean?
Have you seen her since?
I have not seen her since.
You'd definitely be
no,
like...
No, I think I did.
I think you did, right?
I did at the party.
Oh, right.
But I don't think we spoke to her.
She was there.
Anyway,
because you'd definitely be like, you're the girl that got me weed on a boat in Cannes.
Yeah, she next time I... Whenever I see her, I'll tell her that again. But yeah, there was a really fun night. But yeah, and then I ended up going back into Cannes from the boat, like 4 a.m. I remember sitting on like this little mini boat, which like takes you out to the boat. And I'm like, oh, my flight leaves in like, I don't know, 2 hours maybe.
You didn't sleep?
I went back to the apartment that we were staying at.
Oh, you did.
And I fell asleep, and then I got woken up probably like an hour later by one of the people that was in the apartment from Viasat, and they're like shaking me like, Jen, your taxi's here in 30 minutes. And I was like, fell back asleep. And then she woke me up again and she said, Jen, the taxi has left and your flight leaves in an hour.
Which is, I mean, and Cannes is not like, close to the airport.
I just grabbed my stuff. I don't even I don't even think Uber was around that at that time.
No, it was. But it in Cannes, well, when we got there, there was like a whole blockade because the French are very good at blockades and protests and everything. And the cab drivers that year were staging a big blockade to stop the Uber drivers. So there was a whole thing going on that year.
And it was so weird. When I got off the boat, oh my God, I just remember this is popping into my head. When I got off the boat, I remember thinking, how the hell am I going to get back to the apartment? And all of a sudden I hear, doot, 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 someone beeping. And it's just this Italian movie festival arranger that I had met through my sister Malin and her husband at the time, who's like, in LA, I met him. And he's like, Jen, it's Pascal. Jump on the moped. And I was like, Pascal, what are you doing here? And he like drove me back to the apartment. Like sometimes you're in the right spot at the right time. So he drove me back to the apartment. But yeah, then I fell asleep, got woken up, and I jumped in the car. And I remember calling you. You were in London at the time.
And yeah, I had like, I thought there's no way you're going to make the plane.
And I said, I'm in the car. My flight leaves in 45 minutes. And thank God, because those carry-ons that we had bought on the way there saved me. And I got on the plane. And I remember doing like deep breathing because I had obviously not slept and I was very hungover. Or at that time, I probably wasn't even hungover yet. The hangover like kind of kicked in on the plane. Blah. Thank God I don't do that anymore. But yeah, it was a really fun trip. And like, you know, when in Rome, you're 24, you're in Cannes, do it.
While we were there, part of what you were doing, you did this like top three each day of things to talk about at Cannes, right?
Yeah, one of the funniest things that they had me do was they threw me in like the newsroom where everybody sits quietly and writes the news in Cannes on their computers from all the different countries. And they wanted me to go in there to like interrupt them in the middle of their work and like be like, what's the latest news? And I had to run around with a microphone going, any news, and nobody wanted to talk to me.
Any news, any news? Any news? No news.
It was pretty funny. And then the other thing was, yeah, I stopped this random couple who ended up being American, who was staying on a cruise ship. And I had just gone to Bath, where you come from in England, and her southern accent was really thick. So when I asked them, what are your names? She said Bath. And I thought she meant Beth.
Bath.
But Bath is Beth. In a southern accent.
So she said Bath, and you said Bath.
Bath, and they even put like a bath on the screen because I was such an idiot.
Bath.
Bath. Okay, so I don't know if we're going to lose or gain followers now, but yesterday I started taking Harrison's placenta pills.
What? Again? You haven't taken those in like 2 years, I think.
Well, so to kind of tell you guys what I'm talking about. So when you give birth, you have a couple options to do with the placenta. You can either throw in the trash, or you can freeze it and you can keep it there, or you can dry the placenta and make it into capsules that you can then take, which is supposed to be beneficial for you for two different reasons. Or
we had some friends who had it made into face cream.
You can make it into a face cream. You can also chop it up and put it in a smoothie. There are many, many options.
Our doula once did that in the room, in the moment, she told us.
She told us, not with us, but someone else wanted them, wanted the placenta to be chopped up into a smoothie that the mother had right after birth. We were open to do something with it. It felt kind of weird, I think, to throw it in the trash. I'm not sure what the hospital does it, but I think that's what they do. So with Harrison, I was open to our doula taking it and then drying it and then making it into capsules. It can balance your hormones, too, its nutrients, and it could also be good for the baby if you breastfeed. So I did that. I didn't take that many of the pills. I think because Harrison was getting a bit of baby acne, and I was reading that it could be the placenta pills with the hormones. I don't know. It probably wasn't. But then I saw it in the cupboard yesterday and I was like, huh, okay, I've been feeling a little bit of postpartum, so maybe I should try these.
And did you feel any different?
Well, it's only been one day.
Oh, okay. How many did you take? Just one?
Just one, yeah. And I Googled, like, how long does placenta pill last? And it said 2 to 3 years, so...
Oh, okay, so you're just in the window.
But our doula Carmen said that some people freeze them and keep them till menopause.
You can freeze pills? It's like powder, isn't it? Oh, maybe did she mean the pills or the placenta?
The pills.
Oh, wow, okay.
She said some women keep them until menopause and they can help them in menopause.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, I'll give you guys an update in a few weeks on how I'm feeling after those pills. I'm not going to gross you guys out even more if you already think it's gross, but the jar did smell a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. But this time with a twin's placenta, our doula has it in her freezer, and I hope her husband doesn't confuse it with something else, but we are going to get a special placenta reading from this Mexican healer called Miriam in a few weeks, I'm excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's going to be, I'm sure, some mysticism involved and different spiritual things going on. I remember looking at Harrison's just after it came out of you, and there's the whole tree of life, and you can see the arteries and the veins in it, and it's really cool thing to look at. So even if you're not into the spiritual side of it, it's scientifically really interesting. Mm-hmm. And especially the twins, because it has two umbilical cords coming off of it, and the pouch is segmented into two. So you can see the membrane in between. Like, it's going to be really cool to have a closer look at it. And it was surprising to me, actually. I thought that it was going to be enormous. If anything, I think it was smaller than Harrison's.
Mm. I don't know. I guess we'll see what we get from this reading. It's either about how the pregnancy was for me or for them, or it's maybe telling what their future will be like. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. It's fascinating thing to look at. I mean, this part of... I mean, is it part of you or is it part of them? Like, it's its own
thing.
Yeah,
that's true. Is it a part of me or them or us or its own thing?
It's
that's interesting.
Thing, I think. Yeah.
Because it's not an organ that's inside of you normally. It grows inside of you just for the birth.
Yeah, and everything that it is for the sustenance of the children. You know?
Yeah. This time, it kept two children alive.
Yeah, I mean, if you look in your medicine cabinet or your kitchen cabinet, wherever you keep your vitamins, I mean... Where's that come from? Where have those vitamins come from that's been created in a factory somewhere by some company that you're trusting to have put all this stuff in?
That's a good point.
What's the difference between that and the placenta, which is created in your body for your child that is now out in the world? Like, I don't really see a difference. At least you know where that's come from.
Yeah.
I'd actually like to get them tested and like get one of them tested and see like what vitamins are in there. Maybe there's like a high prevalence of something over another thing, you know.
Well, it's kind of like, human breast milk, that's gross. It's like, you're drinking a cow's breast milk.
I know.
What's the difference?
Which is really weird, if you think about it.
Absolutely.
Like, we drink another species' milk. I mean, less and less nowadays, which is probably a good thing. But I did, the other day, like, I've taken to liking a little bit of, like, half and half in my coffee in the morning. And we didn't have any. And I was like, oh, we don't have any milk. Yes, we do. And I haven't taken that step yet.
We have lots of milk.
We have lots of milk in the fridge.
And the freezer.
And the freezer. And I really was like, you know what? I think I'm going to try it at some point in my coffee.
But why would it be gross to drink your wife's breast milk?
I mean, there's no difference, really.
I try it all the time because obviously I spill and you have to make sure that the bottle is working. And
I have too. You have to make sure that the teat is
honestly
working on
it
the
tastes better than cow milk.
Well, there was an interesting our doula had some milk. She came over yesterday to the house and she had some milk that she had gotten for another mother that she was working with, and it was from a milk bank. And that milk that goes to a milk bank and is then sold to mothers who would like to purchase breast milk has been pasteurized. So it's gone through this whole process where it's like heated up to a temperature that makes sure that you kill everything. And I understand that because, you know, you don't want to...
make someone sick in case there would be something.
Just in case,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But like, I've eaten eggs straight from a chicken, and I've had milk like straight from the cow. You know, I have done those things in the past, and it's just literally to eliminate any. It's like in America, you can't get cheese that hasn't been pasteurized.
Right.
Whereas in Europe, you eat blue cheese. Blue cheese has got like you can see the fungus in it. You know, but in America, you can't do that.
Yeah, it feels pretty cool. Like when I'm pumping and I pump like a whole bottle and I put like a cap on it, and I'm like, I could. This looks like I could sell this in a store.
And you could.
And I
you're not allowed to because of the pasteurization and stuff.
Of course, but like you can buy donor. Oh, sorry, you can get donor breast milk, which we have done before when we needed breast milk for our children, because we have only done breast milk. We haven't done formula. But anyway. But yeah, it feels kind of weird to see this like bottle full of your milk.
Yeah, and then if you leave it for a bit,
what is this worth?
You can see
how much could I make?
You can see the cream rising to the top as well, like in cow's milk.
Yeah, it's super cool.
And you can see, yeah, sometimes it's more liquid, more watery, and other times it's thicker. And
yeah,
I mean, there's no difference. Jennifer, do you know what's coming?
No.
Summer. Summer is on its way, and it's time to spruce up our backyard in preparation for friends and barbecues and long summer evenings.
Ah, yeah. That's why we're partnering with Shepherd of Sweden for this podcast. If you love the trendy spring and summer slippers and shoes, you'll adore their home decor range too.
Yes, they have everything from blankets to puffs, pillows, rugs and more, all designed with Scandinavian flair for style and comfort this summer.
Yep, high-quality home decor creates a practical, warm, and stylish outdoor vibe. We need outdoor blankets even in LA because it can get a little chilly.
So don't miss out. Visit shepherdofsweden.com and elevate your home decor today.
So, I have realized that for the rest of our lives, we're going to get comments about having twins.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've been guilty of it as well. I've asked any twins I've seen.
Well, now we have, because we have twins.
Yeah, before I didn't really notice them, and now I see them everywhere.
Yeah. But yeah, because yesterday we were on the beach here in Santa Monica, and, you know, we're walking around with our twins on us. And first of all, I haven't really gotten used to people giving me thumbs up and going, keep it going, and good luck, and like, whoa. I'm like, what are they, you know, cheering at me at? But then I'm realizing, oh, I'm holding two babies in a carrier. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, like, I don't mind, hey, thumbs up, you know, cheers, but I feel like sometimes people want you to be struggling. So when they see twins, it's like, oh, I bet you're up all night and like, life's going to be tough. But then for the first time yesterday, we met someone who had twins on the beach. And he said, you're going to have a blast. It's going to be so much fun. And I really appreciated someone saying something positive.
Well, that's how we feel about it.
Absolutely.
That's our attitude to family in general. But especially now we have twins, we're really excited. And wow, we have like a built-in crew to go everywhere. And yeah, it's going to be hard, but we knew that going in.
But that's like, why build a family if you're just going to be negative about it? Like, why have kids? Isn't the whole part of having kids with someone that you love because it's going to be fun? You're going to build a family? I don't get the whole negativity thing.
Yeah, no, neither do I. I think, yeah, I don't know. Everyone has different attitudes about having a family before they have a family and after they have a family. And I'm the same as you. Like, I don't really get why people's impulse is to go to the negative straight away and say things like, oh, you know, it's going to be really hard. Or like, oh, I wouldn't want to be you, better you than me kind of thing.
It's an interesting interesting thing that I guess I need to start learning how to cope. But I think both you and I are very strong-headed.
Definitely. It would be a problem if we weren't.
Mm.
If we were not strong-headed and people were saying those things to us, that's really going to grind you down.
Mm.
And that's not great. Like, I don't... That's another thing. And you were talking to someone who was also a mother who didn't seem to understand that you're still postpartum and you gave birth to these kids 6 weeks ago.
Mm,
and she doesn't know what's going on with you what's in your head.
Yeah, but that's the same thing about before you give birth when you kind of... getting closer to your birth date, the comments and the text messages and all that kind of stuff, like, almost there, are you ready, any baby yet? You just got to turn your phone off because it can be quite stressful as well.
Well, you at one point you were like, you need to text people, Tom, because I'm not going to text people back.
Exactly. And at this time as well, like, it was a more pressure on me and I was way more sort of nervous, I guess, you could say, before this one, because I know what was going to happen. But yeah, you're right. It's the same thing as like afterwards as well. Like, you don't know what someone's going through. Maybe they are having a really, really hard time.
Yeah.
And you go in like, oh, I bet your life's really hard. Your life sucks. And you're just like... fuck you.
Yeah. No, I can see why lots of people, which is also not healthy, like lock themselves up at home and don't want to see anyone.
Yeah, because they're scared of... But you
need to see people.
Yeah, totally.
But you do need to see people and socialize, and I think it's good to get the babies out as well. And I've been saying, I think one of the most beneficial things we did for Harrison was we went on a big European trip when he was 4 months and we were gone for 3 months. And he's so good with people. And there's a, you know, we'll get into the nurture versus nature conversation, but like, he's so good with people. And I can't help but think that part of it is because his circumstances changed a lot at that time. That doesn't mean to say that he's not super comfortable at home and this is his home, but he definitely is pretty capable of, as long as he's with us or a member of our family, he's very comfortable and he trusts us, and I just love
that. Listen to this, people who are negative. We might go on a road trip across America with 3 children and a nanny. So eat that. So what do you expect from this can trip? What are you going to do?
Well, it is very quick, so I am going to be pretty jet lagged and trying to stay awake and keep me all over the place. But I don't know. Like, I've been acting a long time now, and I haven't actually done that many big screen movies. And this movie especially is very, I mean, it's a movie. It's like big landscapes and like period. And so I'm excited to watch that with an audience. I know that the cinema is going to be full of people.
I wish I could be there.
I know, it's going to be really cool. But we'll go to the premiere. We're going to go to the premiere.
Yeah, in LA. But it's so cool that you can sit there in Cannes.
Yeah, in that really fancy cinema.
Yeah, huge cinema, lots of people. And you'll be like, you know, the row behind, or the same row as Kevin Costner, who's obviously directed and wrote the movie Horizon. And
at the end of the movie, you stand up and everyone applauds. It's going to be wild, because I've seen that as well on TV and so many times, of like the Cannes thing and people go with their movies. And it's also like the Cannes audience is a very like artistic audience who love movies.
So there's
a respect for the art form, and it's not like, oh, we're going to go watch some big blockbuster. It's like, we're going to go watch a film, you know. And there's, I feel like there is a difference between film and movies. And this is definitely a movie also, but like, it's a film which is respected as such in Cannes. And so, you know, it's longer. It's a saga. It's Horizon, an American saga. So it's like a real...
And like you said, it's one of the only movies that are making 4 movies in a row.
Oh my God.
4 sequels, even though it hasn't even, the first one hasn't even come out yet. So you don't even know it's going to be good or not. I mean, hopefully it will be good.
Hopefully. So none of them have been released, but they just started shooting the third one.
Yeah.
And in the history of cinema, this has not happened. Yeah. Lord of the Rings is pretty much the only time that it's happened that they've shot all 3 movies before any of them have come out.
So only 3, and this time it's 4.
And this time, I think he's still planning on doing 4, yeah. Okay. He's definitely doing 3. Mm. Like, Back to the Future, they shot the first one, and then they shot 2 and 3 back-to-back. And they've done that kind
because
of
because the first one was such a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is just, like, Kevin taking his shot, and, like, I'm going to make my epic that I've been looking to do for 40 years at this
and
point.
And what's your part again, so people know?
So I play a character called Hugh Proctor, who is traveling across America with his wife.
And what year is this supposed to be?
It's the 1860s.
Okay.
And so it's the establishing of the American West and everything that comes with that. And so there's different portions of the story, and my portion takes place within the wagon train. And yeah, it's real. You know, I spoke to someone who saw an early screening the other day, and they said it's a tapestry of America at that time. And it is. It really shows you the landscape and the people that existed in America before the Europeans got here, and the Europeans and how wide-eyed they were to the landscape and to the people, and how brutal it could be. And a lot of, you know, we talked a lot when we were filming it of how a lot of people didn't make it to the end of the journey, because for various different reasons, it was a brutal journey to get across America and to establish this country. And it was really cool because I became an American in the last 6 months. I got my passport and did my whole oath and everything, and in between making this movie and it coming out, which is really cool. And I have I've earned my place in this country in the last 10 years. And it's really cool to be like rubber stamping that with this movie.
And now it's weird because you're American, all of our kids are American, and I'm not American yet.
Yeah, you're not. But you can do it this
year.
I
got a green card, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which you had it right before.
Yeah, I mean, we both had like successions of different visas and then green cards and now citizenship. And it's not easy. Like, it costs thousands of dollars.
We weren't sure if we wanted to do it, even though, like, we wanted to live here and want to live here at the moment still. We weren't sure if we wanted to become American citizens just because of kind of what's been America's been going through and where it's at. But now I'm like, well, I want to be where you guys are.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're all American.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But both of us
have always had that, like, obviously that American dream. I mean, my bedroom as a kid was covered in American flags. Yeah. Everything in my room was American.
Yeah.
You know, any like assignment in like art class in school, I would draw the American flag or like, you know, and maybe my mom influenced that as well. Like she would buy like cushions and stuff that had American flag on. It was crazy. Yeah, I was thinking about it. It was like all American stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the TV, I had like all Friends episodes and all DVDs and all the movies. And so we're both similar there. That's what we had in common, obviously, like the American dream, that which is then turned into the California dream.
Exactly.
And we're going to keep dreaming, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you next week after Cannes. All the reviews will be out then.
Oh, maybe it's terrible. No, it's going to be great. See you guys later.
Bye.
Can you hit space bar with your toe? California.